straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 236, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, great guest today, award-winning columnist from the Four Star Telegram, Mac Engel, joins us. Longhorns are facing the TCU Horned Frogs on Saturday, 11 a.m., and Mac has taken some nice time out from his busy schedule. We appreciate you, Mac. What's up?
I want to tell you a fun story, though, Cedric and Kirk. This is about you. So I don't think I've ever told you this. A long time ago, when I was an intern at what was Southwest Missouri State University, and it was coming up, and I was trying to find where I could go on after this because the internship only lasted 10 months. And I'm like, what could I do? So then I find a job as a graduate assistant in the TCU athletic department. This was in 1996. So I apply for the job. I thought, well, what could I do that would really make me stand out? Like, what would I do that could potentially catch the eye of the athletic media relations director, a guy that you remember, Kirk, by the name of Glenn Stone? And Glenn is no longer with us. It was a great, great man. Anyway, so I send him a dummy copy of a front page of what a TCU magazine would look like. And it's just fictitious, right? But it shows that I have writing skills. It shows that I have layout design skills and blah, blah, blah. And like I said, the whole thing is just dummy copy. But it looks authentic and it looks real. And one of the articles that I link to or that I create was written by Kirk Bowles.
No.
Yes. That's the true story. I was looking at it the other day. I'm like, oh, I got to show him this.
Was it written on a...
Yeah, so I it wasn't real or anything like that, but Kirk, you've been inspiring me for all these years, and you're a big reason that I found out later that ultimately I wound up in Fort Worth, Texas, and I've had a career here. So thank you very much.
Wow.
Hey, don't blame me for you being a sports reporter. You could have been a CEO or something.
I could have done something successful with my life as opposed to this.
But you know what? The question I have is, when you found it, was it on a stone tablet or slate or... Scrolls?
No, it was written in hieroglyphics.
It was caveman.
His name was clearly visible, and he still had that beautiful white hair and an unmistakable voice and twang. So even though it's a little bit older, even back then, it was still the same.
Well, we love to go down memory lane, but
it's just good to remember anything these days. Yeah,
back to the good old days. Yeah. What is up with the TCU Horned Frogs, Mac?
They're not very good. I mean, they had a lot of high hopes because I think they're always one of those teams that's just off the radar that you think, well, they might have a pretty good team, but you know, because they never win the recruiting ranking, which is a totally rigged game anyways, no one ever really knows what they have. And I think the other thing why they had so many expectations is because you have a third year quarterback who has started every game that he's since he's walked in the door, and Max Duggan. And you would think, well, that's a lot of football he's played. That's a lot of high-caliber competition he's faced. He's a good athlete. He's pretty good. They should really reap the benefits. And when you watch him play, he's just one of those guys who's still kind of the same. He's not bad. He's pretty good. And what they need, and since TCU has come into the Big 12, they've been really good when their quarterbacks have been Trayvon Boykin, who was outstanding, and then they had a really nice season in Kenny Hill's senior season. That was the year they finished in the top 10, and they played Oklahoma against Baker Mayfield in the Big 12 title game. And I think that's why people thought, and myself included, thought maybe this team will be pretty good, but they barely beat Cal at home. Now, Cal's decent, but they barely beat them at home. And I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch any of the game on Saturday. I doubt it. You were covering the Tech game. They just got run out of their own building against a pretty good SMU team. I mean, SMU is better now under Sonny Dykes. But if you're going to be as good as you think you are, you don't lose at home to SMU, and you certainly don't give up 40 points, which is what they did. And I don't. It wouldn't surprise me if they go out and beat Texas on Saturday, because they always do.
It's what they do.
I wouldn't bet on it.
You know what? You know, the 42-34 loss in the Iron Skillet game was, you know, just a gut punch. But watching the highlights, watching the cornerback Brandon Crossley try to plant that flag at midfield on the TCU logo, and then watching those Horned Frogs get after him in that little kerfuffle, the one thing that occurred to me is if TCU had played if they had hit like that during the game, they may would have won it. I saw better violence after the game than I did before. And now the little general is up in arms because he claimed later that his assistant coach, Jerry Kill, no stranger to medical problems, I might add, got hit in the head with a helmet by an SMU player and now has a concussion. What's the latest on that, Mac?
Well, the part that surprised me about all this is not that SMU celebrated. First of all, let me go back. This is all the best thing that's happened to TCU and SMU in decades.
Because people are talking about
it.
So
irrelevant. Nobody has cared. And the fact that SMU has run into TCU and won consecutive games because they didn't play last season. You know, SMU, Texas transfer Shane Buechel killed TCU 2 years ago. They won that game with a late win. They didn't play last season. Now you've got a kid who trash talks TCU in the days leading up to the game. Says, you know, no one goes to Fort Worth who thinks of Texas. You know, I mean, he craps all over TCU, and then they win the game, and then they plant the flag. And now you've got a coach who throws a tantrum. You've got an AD at SMU who issues a statement. And then you've got the SMU player who said, yeah, they didn't want to play us last season. This is fantastic.
It's wonderful. and you're lucky ass is in Fort Worth right in the middle of all of it. It's columnist gold. It is gold.
It is. It's good for us. It's good for interest. It's good. It's good content. And it's a reason to watch a game that nobody has watched for 30 years. And maybe, Kirk, you can – probably 35 years going back to the Pony Express days when, you know, Craig James and Eric Dickerson and TCU had a little bit of a run with Jim Wacker and Kenneth Davis. Yeah. That's it. Because otherwise it's been horrible.
And it looks like a rivalry. You're right. It's the essence of a rivalry, you know.
Straight.
And, well, here's the other thing, too, is like you mentioned, Sonny Dykes done a really outstanding job. He was ranked an analyst for Gary. For, I don't know, was it a year or 2 years? I can't remember after Sonny left Cal.
I think it was a year. He came back, and so now Gary throws a fit, but that's not news. Gary hates losing to SMU. It's when he did it. Normally what he does, it's right after the game. And you guys know, players and coaches right after the game are usually can be in an emotional state. And you can kind of give them some grace and understand they were just really angry or they were emotional.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
He waited 3 days. 3 days.
This is wonderful.
To say this, which meant he thought about it. And he has nobody in his – and I don't know if Texas has ever had this equivalent, but TCU is so small. The fact that he's been here forever, the guy's got a statue. There's nobody here. No one here who can tell him
anything.
You may not want to say that. Nobody. They're all just, he is the emperor. And so he makes these claims that SMU coordinated planting the flag. The AD says, no, that never happened. And then he says, all of this, I can't substantiate it. That was my favorite part. Not once. He says it twice. So he makes all these allegations about Jerry Kill, who you can make an argument. I'm not sure he should be on the field anyways, but he is, and that's his choice.
Yeah.
He's an adult. You can do what you
want.
He's
making a living.
And amidst all this chaos, he gets knocked down. There's no evidence to suggest that it was an SMU player knocking down. And it probably it wasn't. What it was it was kind of chaotic. You had SMU players celebrating. The TCU players, like said, got all angry about it. And they went after him and said, you can't do that here. Well, here's
big
a better
guys.
Idea.
Big
How about
men.
You not let him score 42 points at home? How about that?
And that'd be a good place to start, wouldn't it?
Yeah, let's just start there. And there, that way, it's not about some flag. Oh, it's flag. And then my favorite part, and one thing that's happened, one of the good things that's come to social media, are sports teams who take their Twitter or Facebook account or Instagram account and troll the other team.
That's popular now, yes.
That's outstanding.
So wonderful.
Then they take a Gary Patterson country song and they use it as background music for basically what amounts to as a celebration video. And Gary takes exception, which is, hey, I wrote that song for COVID.
Right.
Do you think anybody...
Quit pouring gas on it, General.
...who's creating that video is listening to the lyrics of Gary Patterson?
No.
No. They grabbed the song and they just plopped it on there. And they didn't listen to it. Because, well, who cares? They didn't listen to it. So Gary gets this feeling hurt, and I'm listening to it. I'm like, oh, my God. What are you... Stop talking. Like,
this
you sound
wonderful.
Like an old, cranky old man.
Or as a columnist, Mac, you're going, keep talking. Please keep talking. Don't stop. Do not stop.
I mean, I don't think they're going to win Saturday. So now you're looking at a coach who, instead of being 3-1 or 4-0, now you're going to be 2-2 with two of the losses coming at home. The one thing, though, Max Duggan can't beat SMU, but he owns Texas.
Yes, he does.
Maybe, and I don't know how good, you guys know how good Texas is, or maybe, but I'm watching, I'm like, man, I'm not feeling this. But just given the way these last nine games have gone between these two, and whatever voodoo Gary has on UT, it wouldn't surprise me if they won it, but I wouldn't bet on that.
I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't either.
But you know what? They are.
Go ahead, Seth.
They are 7-2 in the last nine meetings. He owns them. Max Duggan has outplayed Sam Ehlinger twice, and I just, you know, I wonder what's in the water. I mean, TCU's won the last three at Amon Carter, and but this is a new Texas regime. But these players are still on the team, and they remember. They remember getting beat. I remember the Charlie Strong one that was over before it started. There have just been some nightmare games for the Longhorns in Fort Worth. I think they're more equipped to do, you know, to go in there and take care of business. But what I'll ask you, Mac, how do you ascribe to the theory of wounded animal, puncher's chance? And what role does the recent history in this rivalry, what role do you think that will play in the minds of the Longhorns and the Horned Frogs when they take this field?
Well, you know, when I looked at the game last year, Texas should have won that game. You know, they had a turnover going into the end zone.
Deontay Ingram.
That was 7 points.
Yep.
There was a couple of other big plays. I think one of the things that has worked in Max Duggan's favor consistently is that because he's white, nobody thinks he can run, and he is fast as hell. And
pretty
you've
fast.
Seen him. You've seen him. I saw him do it last year on the big draw play against UT. He's running away from defensive backs
from Houston.
He did it against. Yeah, and he did it against Texas Tech and some other teams. He's not a great passer, and what's happened when I look back at the close games between TCU and Texas, which there haven't been a lot of. They've been lopsided. But last season was the one where I thought that game changed on about four or five plays that just went. Now, that was sort of indicative of the Tom Herman era. They would lose on about four or five plays that you would, I mean, it just was incredible, the consistency of it. But hey, they always practice really well on Sunday. You know, I always love that about the Tom Herman teams. They, great practices on Sunday.
Never understood that.
I think, Cedric, there's something to be said for that. You know, you have – I think the other – there is something to be said for a team that got embarrassed at home, and I don't think I wouldn't put it past all a bunch of college kids if they thought they were looking past SMU and they were more excited about playing Texas, and they thought they could just show up and beat a team that needed a Hail Mary to win at Louisiana Tech the week before, that they would just show up and beat that team. Because they weren't going against Shane Bichelle. They were going against Tanner Mordecai, who's pretty good. He's probably not as good as Shane. But Reggie Roberson kicked their butt again.
Hey, dude's a stud.
I think Gary got out-coached, to tell you the truth, because I don't think he had his team ready to play. I think they were, looking at Texas. But the one thing that TCU lost some pretty good players off that defense, and I don't know how much of it you had a chance to watch, their secondary got destroyed. Now, Gary gambles a lot. He likes to bring pressure, and there's 20 years worth of evidence to say this guy knows what he's doing.
Oh, yeah.
But, he lost a phenomenal player back there in Trey Mooring to the NFL, and he lost a really good linebacker to the Texans in Garrett Winslow. Those guys are hard to replace. And if you look at consistently when he's had really good teams, good defenses, he's had a linebacker who can run all over the place.
Like,
and
Tank,
really play
like a Tank
space.
Carter back in the day.
Tank would be a guy. That the 2014 team had a couple of guys. Paul Dawson was like that. A guy that's a little undersized. Almost looks like a safety. I don't know if he has that. And it allows him, if you're going to be aggressive, that other team better miss. Like, miss on their own. Just not execute. Because if they execute, you're going to get fried. I think, Cedric, the game will be close.
Of course.
But I think it's going to need in order for TCU to win, they're going to have those kind of just random plays go in their favor that never went in Tom Herman's favor in his close games in the Big 12.
Well, I'm sure Gary's going to watch that Arkansas game film over and over, and they just had a great blueprint. They ran the ball. KJ Jefferson, not a great passer, but they ran all over Texas, over 300 yards rushing. And I'm sure he wants to do that with Max and Zach Evans. But Arkansas has just a super fast, quick defense. And that's where I wonder, you mentioned it a little bit with these linebackers and the secondary problems. And they've given up 74 points the last two games. So is there just major slippage on that side of the ball, Max?
Yeah, I think there is. He's lost talent, and it's not like they're bombs. It's not like we're looking at the Kansas defense. There's certain guys, and they typically, what he does is that team usually gets better
as they go.
Treverius Hodges Tomlinson, who is the nephew of LaDainian Tomlinson, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
But there's some of these other guys, he's putting them in positions one-on-one that you're like, oh, boy, I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. And he's taking risks. And you're talking about, like, the Arkansas defense. I saw them. I went to the A&M Arkansas game on Saturday at AT&T Stadium.
I was there.
Yeah, you were there. Gary doesn't have those kinds of athletes up front that they can run three-man fronts and then run all over the place.
And still get pressure. Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't have those guys, but I still think the one element to this that Cedric kind of hit on, wounded animal, all that stuff. I really think, in hindsight, this was a case of a team that did not take its opponent nearly seriously enough and had it handed to them. But that said, if TCU is going to win on Saturday, that offense is going to have to be better than it was. I mean, they left so many points on the board, and I got to tell you, and I don't know what quarterbacks you've seen in your time, but you've seen guys come in and they're good, but they just never really get that much better. And I hate to say it, that's what I've seen with Max Duggan. He's pretty good. He just hasn't really gotten that much better.
Some might say that about Sam. That Sam was really good. He was at that level, but he, what did he go, sixth round, Cedric?
Yeah.
I mean, he made the most out of his talent, maximized his abilities. But you're right. I mean, you mentioned the running. I mean, he's got almost 1,200 yards rushing in his career. Max is, a hell of an athlete. But they're going to have to make some plays. It's weird, too. The guys, the odds maker. I don't know what it is today, but it's been like a 4-point Texas betting line right now. So that tells us something. Maybe Texas.
Well, what do you trust what you see so far? Like, and they've looked really, when they put Casey Thompson in, they look totally, yeah, look so much better. Do you trust it?
I do.
I trust it. The one thing I'll say about it is I guess Hudson Card was Steve Young in camp and then had one bad day at the office and got a quick hook, because the way Casey Thompson's been playing, I just don't see how the Hudson Card could have been so much better than him to win that job. I just think he took upside over what his eyes were telling him. So I trust what I see. He's been consistently good every time he's played, Casey Thompson. And he's smart, and he takes what they give him. And I'd be shocked if he went into Fort Worth with Deer caught in headlights. Look, he's a veteran.
No, I don't think so. I agree, Sid. He's not. He is so poised, Mac. He's just, you really would like this guy. He's a film geek. He just lives in the film room. And we talked to him Monday, and you know, he had 5 incompletions and 6 touchdowns, you know, 5 through the air against Tech. And he said, and I can tell you everything I did wrong on those completions. I mean, this is as humble, grounded a kid and a guy with desire and intangibles, and his team believes in him. So, frankly, I'm stunned by the line, guys. I mean, I thought he'd be like, you know, Texas by 10 or so. And I know we always overreact.
No, I'm not stunned by the 4.5. That sounds well. Here's the thing, Doug. Here's the thing, and you know, I got to school him, Mac, because he's a rich guy because he's avoided casinos, and I don't have any money because I couldn't avoid them. So here's what they
right?
do,
you
Doug.
Avoid casinos, right?
When Go you, ahead. I don't avoid. I wished I could. Vegas gives you 3 points when you're hosting.
Sure.
And so the fact that Texas is a 4.5-5-point favorite on the road means in actuality they're about an 8-point favorite. They're giving TCU that 3-point spread, that 3-point bonus for playing at Amon Carter. If this game were at UT, the Longhorns would be a 10-point favorite. But
here's a question I have. Could Texas have more fans there, Mac, than TCU?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh,
so it's
yeah,
not
I mean,
really
this is
home field advantage goes out the window a little bit.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, you've been up here. I mean, you're talking about it. Like, a friend of mine said this the other day, who's been at TCU forever, and he said TCU is basically a girls' school with a football team. And
good-looking girls at that school. I mean, I've been on that campus.
Yeah,
it's like 62. I think the student body population is 62% female.
Wow.
That's really high. And
it's really
it
great.
Really, and, you know, when I've talked to coaches, it's always funny. When I talk to coaches who first come here of the men's teams, they always say the biggest problem that they have with the freshmen, it's not the academic workload. It's not the getting adjusted to the sports. It's not getting adjusted to the new routine.
It's the ladies.
Better athletes.
It's the ladies.
It's the girls.
Nice.
That their brains explode because they're standing there, and all of a sudden, they've got 10 pretty girls coming at them at all hours of the day, and they don't know what to do.
Yeah, they know what to do, Mac. Trust me, they know.
Well,
they know what to do.
But there is no, like, when you come to TCU, look, TCU is a great place. It is a terrific place, and they've spent $1 billion, and they really have done a nice job. And I give them all the credit in the world for being where they are. But you're talking about a school with 9,000 kids. Texas has more undergraduate students right now than I think TCU does has living alumni in Dallas-Fort Worth. And the one thing that, instead, you and I have had this back and forth on Twitter, the one thing Texas, Florida, Ohio State, UCLA, a handful of these schools, they can create T-shirt fans better than anybody else. There's no explanation that requires you walk into a Walmart or a Target and you want a sports shirt. You're going to go, oh, Texas, okay, I'm going to get that one. Why wouldn't you get TCU? Well, I don't even know what TCU is. It might require some explanation. So when I go to the game on Saturday or any of these Texas games, who knows how many of them are going to be actual alums of Texas as opposed to just people who live in the state and they like Texas because it's Texas. So TCU might have, there's 48,000 fans. It'll be full. That's one of the few times that stadium will be full. And I would expect Texas will have a slight, at a home stadium, Texas will have more fans there, just barely, than TCU.
How have the crowds been?
I remember, well, the one thing is fun, and I know you've seen this, people love to beat Texas. And the year, Max Duggan's first year, when he kept going to Jalen Reagor and they beat Sam Ellinger, I remember what a fun atmosphere that was. That was a fun atmosphere. But, guys, I mean, these are different teams. These are different coaches. Yeah. All of it's different. And, you know, we're talking about Max Duggan and, you know, Casey Thompson. Keep an eye on this. SMU ran all over TCU. I mean, it wasn't like this was Shane Buechele going out there and throwing for 450. They had two guys run for more than 100 yards, and they didn't. Ulysses Bentley went for 153, and Trey Sluggers went for 110. You're not going to beat anybody if you can't stop a running game like that.
And Texas's running backs are better, too.
Yeah, and that's like, if Bentley did that, what is Robinson going to run for? 18?
Oh, yeah. And they're going to just do that over and over. You know, I think Texas is going to win by 14 points or more. I really do. I just, you know, maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but
you are.
This team is just rolling with confidence. And they've kind of exercised the demon that is Arkansas. And I just think the change at quarterback has just meant everything to this team. And they got this guy, Xavier Worthy, Mac, if you haven't seen, he's a star in the making. It's a willowy kid out of California. Signed with Michigan and had three touchdowns last week. And, you know, they've got tremendous chemistry going. So, well, the last thing I want to ask you, Mac, is just a little deeper question. And, like, is Gary Patterson's best days come and gone? And where is TCU going once Texas and Oklahoma leave for the SEC?
Good question.
I think you brought up something that no one wants to talk about in Fort Worth. That certainly no one really wants to talk about too loudly around TCU's campus, which is we have a coach here who's done things and has helped elevate our status and visibility and profile to places that we had never been or thought possible, right? And that's really hard. You know, he's not going to go anyplace else.
Right.
That window has closed. He's not going to go anyplace else. I do think he has romanticized about retirement.
Really?
He's got a music career.
Stop it.
Stress of the job is a lot. I think Gary, even though sometimes the things that come out of his mouth are just defy logic, how he treats his staff and the fact that he cares about their families and his support staff, and he cares about their well-being and their quality of life. I really mean that. I know some of the things that he says to those guys is awful, but I know that he works really hard at making sure all of these guys get paid pretty well. And
right.
Because he remembers what it was like to be broke. He remembers what it was like to really struggle as an assistant. So even though he demands a lot out of these guys and they work long hours, they make a lot of money and their families have a nice quality of life. And and I know he carries that. I know he worries about what you're talking about. What's going to happen to TCU when the Big 12 loses Texas and Oklahoma? Because the stadium can't fill up for anybody other than Texas and Oklahoma. It can't.
Right.
And that's
right.
Only a 48,000. And that's, I think it's the fifth smallest stadium in Power 5 football. So
wow.
I think this is what I think will happen. Gary is going to romanticize about retirement. Because he doesn't want to be Bill Snyder, and Bill hung on too long. But Bill was in his 70s. Gary's only 61, and he's in pretty good shape.
Mm-hmm.
He could keep doing this. So I think he's going to keep. No one's going to fire him. Nobody. He's earned the right to be there until he's 150 years old. So I think he's going to keep hanging on, mostly because he's scared of what the other side looks like. You know what I mean? Like what Bob Stoops did. He has more money than he could ever count. Mm-hmm. He has so much money, Kirk. It's ridiculous. And, you know, he earned it. Good for him. So I think he'll stay. I think Texas and Oklahoma leave. They bring in four new teams. I think TCU and Houston will wind up in the Pac-12 for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. Then I think that's going to fall apart. And then I think schools like TCU, Wake Forest, Duke, all of the small schools are going to be eliminated from Power 5 football. And I think then Power 5 football will shrink down to about 30 to 40 teams. TCU will not be a part of that new reconfiguration in the next 8 to 10 years. And that then I think Gary will probably retire between 68 and 70. I don't think he's going to – like I think his contract runs through 25, Kirk. But are his best days behind him? Yeah, yeah, probably.
He's not going to win another – he's not going to win it.
I think he wants – he won the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, he's not winning another Rose Bowl, no.
No, he's not. I mean, but what he really – I know what he wants. He wants one more really good team. Mm-hmm. And like the team that they had in 2014 – like that Trayvon Boykin team was so good,
and they should have been
in the playoffs. They really were, and he wants.
Oh yeah,
one
they got
more of those.
There. Yeah,
they did. Well, that's the team that he wants, and I don't know if he'll ever get it again.
You're gonna make me cry, Mac. I mean, jeepers, Debbie Downer here.
But you know what?
Well, no, it's.
He
it's
just
not,
said he's gonna.
I go back to one thing. I've been asked about this 1,000 times, Kirk. Cedric, of all the stories that we have seen in major college football since 1985,
right,
what TCU has done is as good as anybody else because they were dead, right? They were given the walking death penalty. They weren't given to SMU's penalty, but it was almost worse because they kept having to play, and they got destroyed. They got left out of college football majors first major reconfiguration, right? They had to go to the WAC. They were dead. And for them to do what they did and to be in this position now, who cares if they ever win? They're not going to win national championship. But the fact that they're part of Power 5 football and that they've had some success in it and they won a Big 12, it's amazing. And so, and Gary deserves a lot of that credit. He really does. So I think it's an amazing success story. Yeah, he's got a statue. But you know who else has a statue?
Is it?
So, you know, I'm not going to say it. Never mind. I'm not going to say it.
Doak Walker.
But
did you say Doak Walker?
I shouldn't have thought it.
Yeah.
But yeah, Doak Walker. Somebody else. But, and it just, you can't have it forever. I mean, Mac Brown went through it.
Yeah.
Mac Brown, they all go through it, right? You have a window, and you hopefully you get to take advantage of it, and they did. Mac won a national championship. TCU won a Rose Bowl, and they got in the Big 12. There it is. That's it. Yeah. That's your high point. And it's usually just not the end of it.
And I think you're right. I think the Power Five will shrink. I think there's an inevitability about that, and it's sad. I hope it never shrinks to 30 or 40 teams.
That is so small, you know, Mac. You said 30 or 40. That just took my breath away. I was like, man, I feel like there'd be more than that.
Well, I say that.
I'm hoping it's 60 or 70 maybe, but yeah.
I hope you're right, and I think – you know, when you have people like the president of West Virginia, Gordon G., who and people who politically are savvy and understand the value of just being attached to those other schools and those other teams, and they can move whatever pawn that they can to remain a part of it the way he did, which was, yeah, we're not going to vote for playoff expansion if this is the way this is going to go. And so the part that scares me about this major college football reconfiguration, if it goes to 30 or 30. I don't want it. I don't want to see it. Television is going to dictate it.
Sure.
Right. So if ESPN or Fox Sports 1 or Amazon or Hulu or Apple TV or any of them get involved and they say, okay, this is what we're doing, then that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. And you know, I think the other part of the equation, it's why I've written that TCU status is up in the air. You're not filling up stadiums. Like, they overbuilt these stadiums. Texas is too big. A&M, they're too big. And the only way you can get good crowds, great crowds, is if it's big versus big. Or Notre Dame.
Exactly.
And I don't know. So I don't know where TCU falls. They're going to spend every dime that they've got to remain a part of that. But I do think in the next 8 to 10 years, we'll see some more cutting. And whether or not TCU can remain above that waterline, I don't know. It's going to be tough. But I've been wrong before.
I can't.
We will appreciate and love college football while we have it.
Yeah, that's for sure. We can't let you get out of here without talking about the Cowboys, Mac. We were both
I'm making my Super Bowl plans right now. I'm looking at the schedule, so I'm planning Super Bowl tickets right now.
Oh, that's very cool. While you're at it, why don't you buy a couple for Mike McCarthy? and make sure someone holds his hand to make sure he makes it to the flight, because he's the worst time manager since Dr. Emmett, whatever his name was, on Back to the Future. His time management skills are old west. I mean, you got Peyton Manning yelling at his television, "Call a timeout, Mike! Call a timeout, Mike!" And he took those two timeouts in the first half to the locker room like they were cell phone minutes. They don't roll over. What's going on with Mike McCarthy, and how did he win a Super Bowl?
He won a Super Bowl because he had Aaron Rodgers.
That's it.
And, thank you.
You know, it kind of reminds me of Tony Dungy. Like, Tony should have won another Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, and they didn't. Right. But he's a great guy. He's a great coach. I think, and if you look at what Mike has done since he's been here, he's had a few of those where you're like, what are you doing here? Like, I know everybody's killing him about the clock thing, and they should have. The one to me that didn't make any sense was at the end of the third quarter, early fourth quarter against Philadelphia on Monday night, was they're up by two scores. It's 4th and 3 from the Eagles 3. And rather than kick the field goal and make it a three-score game, he went for the touchdown.
Dumb.
They got the touchdown, so it worked. But that's the one I'm like, why would you take that?
That was a head scratcher.
And he does.
Is Jerry happy with Mike McCarthy?
No way. There's no way.
Today.
Today.
I mean, Jerry's happy. First of all, Jerry's happy every day. He has $9 billion and a great life, and he knows it. He does. Exactly. And Jerry's, and Kirk, the one thing, the older I get, I can appreciate this now. I can see older people, and really, they're just happy that they're alive and doing okay.
Right.
And
so,
we saw that.
Else is crazy.
We saw that Monday night with Jerry and Jimmy with the ring ceremony. And they are really, it's good to see old people find each other before they die, because we know old people die, and you didn't want to see them going to the grave with a blood feud like Ali Frazier did. It's good to see them laughing, and even if they're just making nice for the cameras, it warmed my heart to see that.
Life's too short.
I totally agree, Cedric. Everything you just said. It was great to see that. Just that, you know, whatever differences that they might have had, how real they were and genuine they were in the moment, that ultimately they don't really mean that much. And that there was a friendship there. There was a bond there. And I was so happy to hear Jimmy Johnson say, thank you. And he said it multiple times. You gave me the opportunity.
Thank you, Jerry
Jones.
And he
recognized how important that was, that none of this happens. That maybe somebody else gives him the chance, but nobody gave him that chance to be the head coach of the Cowboys and to have basically carte blanche and whatever else ultimately is. There was a great story I heard about Jerry and Jimmy one time, a long time ago, that when Jimmy lost somebody, it was after he left the Cowboys, and Jimmy lost somebody in his family. It might have been his mother. And Jerry sent over to the Johnson house tons of food, groceries, just endless amounts of food. And people who've gone through loved ones understand how important that is, because it's just one of those things that you have to take care of, but you don't have time to take care of it. That's a really thoughtful gesture. So I think while they may have had differences and ego clashing, watching this sort of evolve over the last few months has been fantastic, because it showed ultimately all that stuff doesn't really matter. And what matters is the great experiences that they've had with each other and ultimately the love they have for each other. And that, like you said, life's too short to worry about the other junk.
Absolutely. It's all about relationships. And hey, guys, you know what we're headed for, don't y'all?
No.
The Dream Super Bowl Dallas Cowboys versus the Buffalo Bills.
No, we aren't.
I can see it.
We aren't.
I can see it.
No way.
Hey,
no.
Buffalo or the Rams may be the best team in the NFL.
I think the Rams are.
Cowboys are a little notch below. Get that defense a little better, then we'll talk. Okay?
I think the Rams are the best in the NFC, and the AFC is. The Bills are right there. I'll give you that.
They're a complete team.
The Chiefs can't stop anybody.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
That quarterback's pretty dangerous.
He is. Golly. He just lit up. Who did they play? Miami? Or I can't remember. He had like 358 yards and 4 touchdowns. He's the real deal.
Yeah. They beat up Washington the last game, and he looks great. He looks like, version of Patrick Mahomes.
But do you think
Buffalo and Cleveland getting better. I just love that. Just kind of new blood in the league.
Well, Mac, how close are the Cowboys, Mac? I wrote that the defense is evolving before our very eyes. Dan Quinn has been a godsend. But how close are they to really making some playoff noise? We all agree here that they're going to win the NFC, so let's not even talk about that. But beyond that, do you see them winning a playoff game if things stay the same and they stay healthy?
There's one game to me that matters because they haven't done it in so long. Can they win a divisional game? Not a wild card game, a divisional game.
Can you get to the conference title game?
They haven't been to a title game since 96. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, and it's so early yet, and nobody... We haven't seen the attrition of injuries happen yet, but I think there's a few things that you would say, yeah, because they have some really good players who are young, and young players will stay good in December. Old guys, you don't know. So you're looking at Micah Parsons, Trayvon Diggs, mm-hmm. CeeDee Lamb, Dalton Schultz, Tony Pollard. Zeke Elliott is right on that line.
He's coming up on 30. He's getting close.
Yep, he's but he's still there yet. He's been durable.
He looked good.
Leighton Vander Esch has looked, but I mean that's one you got to put a red flag on.
What about Jalen Smith? Is he figuring the future of this?
Nah, probably not. But I mean he's under contract and he's a nice guy and he plays. He's reliable. He doesn't produce big plays, but he is reliable and. In that league, that if you're playing every day and you're starting and you're reliable, that has value. And so, I think his biggest problem has been, I don't know how smart of a player he is. I think that has been one thing that has been overlooked is that he's a great guy. He's a great story. He's inspiring. He's really nice. He's a pro. But I'm not sure he can really figure out defenses and or specifically what the other team is doing and where he should be. Some guys just can't. And mm-hmm. Some guys are so good athletically and they can cover 1,000 miles in 2 seconds. And that's not him. I just don't know if he's a great thinker of the game. And I know anybody who's going to hear like, oh, Max is racist. No, that has nothing to do with it. He's a great guy. He's a bright guy. Well, just because he's a bright guy, there's plenty of bright guys that I've met who it didn't necessarily translate to the field. Jalen Smith is a bright guy, and he's going to be really successful in life when he's done with football.
But he's not football bright.
He'll be just fine.
He's not football bright.
And I've met plenty of dumb guys who are really smart on a football field. But when I look at Jalen, I look at sometimes what he does. I'm like, I don't know if he knows what's coming or not. And he's played in the league for a long time now.
But you know what? I am
stick around.
I mean, I've never thought of it. What you just said, those guys you named off, are all in their 20s. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going to be around for a while, and Jerry doesn't mind paying them. So, and he's got his quarterback shored up for years. I think this is his window. This is Jerry's window to get back to a Super Bowl. And a case could be made that they could be undefeated. They were one drive away from shutting down Tom Brady. And they could be
unbeaten. The game.
Yeah, they should have won that game.
Should have. Yeah. Absolutely. All about possibilities.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and you saw it, Dak Prescott is playing better than he ever has before.
Out of his mind. Sliding. He's not taking on tacklers anymore. He's learned from that injury, and he's playing like a QB1 who knows that if he gets hurt, his team will go south because they just do not believe in backup quarterbacks in Dallas. They just don't.
Playing smarter.
Yes, and I look at, you know, when I watched him play against Tampa, when he threw 58 times, and then Monday night against Philly, look how accurately he's throwing the ball. I mean, he's always been pretty accurate, but that had been the one concern. Is like, I mean, he is putting it wherever he wants to put it. Mm-hmm. And that was the one detail to his game. I was like, boy, if he can get that down, then he becomes super dangerous. And he becomes a guy that you can win because of. Like, you, other parts of your team may not go as well, but if that guy's playing really, really well, then you got a shot. And I look at the way he's played these last three games, I'm like, nah, he looks pretty damn good to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, I said it the other day to Clarence Hill, I said, I think he's played these last three games as well as, if not better, than I ever saw Tony Romo play.
Wow.
Tony played some really good
games. He did.
Tony played some really good games. I know that's a lot. But I'm thinking, I'm like, that's because he's just deadly efficient right now.
That one throw, and apologize for Kirk's dogs. They're mowing Kirk's yard. That one throw he made to Cedric Wilson when he's running to his left under duress, and he just for a second plants and throws a dime 40 yards down the field. And Ced didn't get that second foot down. But that's the best football throw I've seen in a long time from someone who's not Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers makes that throw all the time, and so does Mahomes. You don't see other guys making that, and Dak is making those kind of throws.
He's a legit MVP candidate. There's no question about it. He's got so many weapons, and that in the weak division, they're going to have a lot of confidence building, you know, toward December, I think.
And that division is garbage.
It really
is. Worst ever, isn't it?
I mean, you've got Jalen Hurts can't play. He's a backup. He's a career backup. I don't know what Daniel Jones is. I know Jason Garrett's probably going to get run out of New York pretty soon.
He is.
And yeah. Washington doesn't have anything.
Nothing. There's
you
no
judge
threat.
A division
no
by the you judge a division by the quarterbacks. Look at the NFC West. I mean, Jimmy G is average, but then Russell Wilson, Matt Stafford. I mean, Kyler Murray. I mean, that they're gonna have three. Good Lord, those dogs! They're gonna have three quarterbacks.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah.
Is Kirk running like a dog fighting ring in his house? Is that how he makes his other money?
There's no way it's a dog fighting ring because they're both winning. If it is, so usually in a dog fight, once one dog's barking, someone's getting his butt kicked. But those dogs are both winning. So.
Oh my God! Yeah, and I'm losing.
You're gonna be, yeah, but. Mac, man, we appreciate it so much. It was always good to catch up, man. And you're going to be at Eamon Carter, I assume, on Saturday.
That is the plan.
I will see you up there. And then Cowboys, Panthers on Sunday. I'm spending the night. I'll be there for that, too. So, man, it's always a pleasure to catch up. And thanks for joining us. And we'll catch up again real soon.
Okay, guys. Thanks so much. Be good. Thank you, Kirk.
Thank you, Mac.
Later.
Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks,
guys. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Duck, the great Mac Engel weighing in. Always fun, a good storyteller, and just a, you know, and he doesn't run away from the tough topics in the Metroplex. I mean, Galloway always did it, and Mac Engel is not afraid of a fight. That's why I love reading him with the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. Man, I think that's going to do it for us on this illustrious episode of 236 of On Second Thought. We have to thank Mac Engel, and we also have to thank Kirk's dogs for joining us. For the Duck Kirk Bowles, I'm Ced Golden, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Ced and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.